This is a prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Website mbeinstitute.org. The topic for this prayer treatment is 1 to 7 God Day. By 1 to 7, it is intended to provide the intention of covering all seven of the synonymous terms of God, which is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. And there's four adjectives prior to those seven words, which are incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite. There's also four operators. Math has add, subtract, multiply, and divide. But the system of divine metaphysics is Word, which is all the facts about God, Christ, which means to translate whatever you're seeing, if it's less than 100% godlike, it needs to be transferred. Your thought needs to transform to quantity of consciousness, which is pure, not a percentage, but pure, 100% pure. And that means that mind has to be mental. Spirit has to be mental. Soul has to be spiritual, and so forth. This is what Mary Baker Eddy states about day from the glossary on page 584. The irradiance of life, light, the spiritual idea of truth and love. Quote, and the evening and the morning were the first day. End of quote. That's from Genesis 1, verse 5. The objects of time and sense disappear in the illumination of spiritual understanding. And mind measures time according to the good that is unfolded. This unfolding is God's day, and there shall be no night there. The Bible says, there is nothing new under the sun. That is telling us that truth is always truth. It's not a new truth. It is truth that has always been. No beginning nor end. Truth is a symbol because it's not visible and not tangible. And one symbol that could be utilized is a circle, indicating no beginning and no end. And the circle needs to be thought of as being expandable, naturally expandable. So we want to feel free to let our consciousness expand as long as the content is pure. If there's any impurity, then we need to notice, clarify, accept the fact that anything less than godlike is only a temporal misview. In other words, an incorrect view, a view that is missing spirit. Because spirit is flawless. So if the view is not flawless, then it is a prior view that needs to be examined to see what the source is, and we need to expose the source and rid ourselves permanently of what that problem appeared to be. With our foremost effort to be to follow the first quote in the textbook, which is Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, which states, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And the second quote is equally important by Shakespeare. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And what happens when we are doing number one and number two both? And by number two, I mean that we are making sure that we are seeing the spiritual nature of anything that comes our way and not accept evil as being real. So it's a filtering that we must be doing constantly. Let's take a look at the three definitions of God as provided to us in the textbook. The first one is in Recapitulation, which is chapter 14, which by definition is a summary of all of the preceding chapters. On page 465 is the beginning of a 24 Q&A. Now, the importance of this is indicating the position. And the position of the definition of God is El Numero Uno. It's number one. It's right at the beginning. The chapter covers pages 465 to 499. The textbook is divided into two sections. The beginning through page 499 is Science and Health. Page 500 to the end, which is page 700, is Key to the Scriptures. So here's the definition of God from page 465. What is God? God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. The four adjectives of incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite are addressing as a group and individually each of the following seven terms that are the primary synonymous terms to define God. And whenever they are used in that way, they are capitalized. Now, if they're the first word in a sentence where it's customary to always capitalize the first letter of the first word, we need to look at the sentence wherein it is used to determine if that is capitalized to intend it to relate to God, or is it capitalized only because it's the first word in the sentence. So putting that aside, let's realize what this is telling us. In another place, Mary Baker Eddy tells us that the only power obtainable is the good we do and embody. In other words, if it is totally ingrained in consciousness, then we will automatically let that be the guide to all thought, speech, and action. Jesus tells us that thinking about something is the same as doing it. So even thinking about something that is a representation of truth, or even if it's a lowercase relative truth, something that we know to be true about the capital T truth, then we want to focus on that as well. Because we are here as a symbol in the so-called human frame, and we need to do what Jesus did, and that is to take it to the maximum of utilizing that symbol of our body to be doing nothing but good, pure, flawless activities, so that we are really representing the true image and likeness of God, which we cannot do unless we are focusing on the flawless, one and only real substance, which is spirit. Soul is how we identify things. seeing, hearing, feeling, smell, and taste. If we are utilizing the spiritual substance, the only real substance there is, then that means that the seeing, hearing, and so forth is going to be totally immersed in spirit, so that we're going to be looking for, in vision, for example, we're going to be looking for the spiritual versus the material. We're going to be sorting out, we're going to be filtering out anything in our seeing, hearing, feeling, smell, or taste which is not spiritual. We have a choice. We're either going to go one way or the other. There is no mixture. Any attempt to mix spirit and matter means that we are staying in the material, because spirit is flawless. So we have to decide, are we going to go the spiritual route and really make a sincere effort to be reflecting what Genesis says about man in verse 26 and 27 of chapter 1, where it says that God made man in his image and likeness, and it also says, and let us make man in the image and likeness of God. And Mary Baker Eddy says that's telling us that the us is life, truth, and love. So, life is how we're living. Are we living the qualities of God? Truth, are we staying on track? Or are we letting ourselves deviate? And love, are we nurturing it like a mother nurtures something to fulfillment? If we're doing all three of those things, then we cannot help but be expressing the image and likeness of God, because those represent flawless characteristics. So if we look at the first term, which is incorporeal, that's telling us that God is not a body. God is mental. It's a concept. Same with spirit. Spirit is not a body. Spirit is a concept. The same with soul. Principle. Life, truth, and love. There may be symbols of each one of these that we may be reviewing and viewing, but that is only a reminder of what is underneath. Now, the second term after incorporeal is divine. It's common to use the word divine to define or symbolize anything that appears to be perfect. Supreme is the third one. We all know what supreme means. Everything is below it. It is the apex of perfection. And the fourth one has to do with unlimited quantity. And that can only be one word. Infinite. Infinite. Everything about God is infinite, because God is omnipresent. Let's go to the second definition. That's from page 587. God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all substance, intelligence. Mary Baker Eddy is telling us the definition of God just in a little different way, and the synonymous terms are in a different order, but it's all the same content. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love. And the words that she is bringing emphasis to, all-knowing, all-seeing, all all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, eternal. And then all-substance and intelligence at the end. Intelligence is really a part of omniscience. Omniscience includes all intelligence, all wisdom, and all knowing. We must claim our inheritance as including all of those things. Now, I'm talking about our inheritance of reflection, because God is the only owner. God is the only source, and therefore God is the only one that has those qualities. We have the opportunity to reflect them. And the reason we have that opportunity is because spirit, which is the only substance, is flawless and therefore is transparent. And what happens when something is flawless and transparent? It is 100% reflective. When we think about a spiritual thought, that is reflected out into the universe of spirit, the universe of God, the universe of principle, soul, life, truth, and love. The third definition is immediately following, and it is under the term of good, G-O-O-D. It is defined as God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. Think of that. God is omniaction. That means there can never be a chaotic action. That would, of course, include any kind of a storm whatsoever. Any kind of chaos. And of course that includes everything that appears to be an accident. God cannot create it. Habakkuk tells us that God is of purer eyes than to behold evil. Certainly anything that is chaotic is not good. It's not perfect. It's not harmony. It's not balance. It is chaos. It is friction. It is not from God. Not a single thing that is outside of the bounds of perfect harmony and perfect balance could be sourced from God. There's no deviation in what God represents. God is 100% perfection in everything, in every single quality. They represent perfection, perfect mind. What do we mean by perfect mind? Love is the term that is defined as being perfect. Why? Because love nurtures mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Mind is the thinker, but love is the nurturing facility. So, if we say perfect mind, we are combining the perfection of love with the mental qualities of mind. And the same with spirit and soul and principle, and life and truth. If we utilize the word perfect, which is a quality of love, then we're combining the two qualities. And that's exactly what the system of divine metaphysics is all about. Following is exactly what Mary Baker Eddy says about the system of divine metaphysics. The quotes will include text from page 146 and page 330. The paragraph title to the first quote says, "Divine Metaphysics Reduced to System." Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. And on page 330, she states this, 32 planks of the platform. When the 32 planks of the platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. Can it be more clear? If you would ask 1 million people who claim to be Christian Scientists, you would be lucky to find 25 that would even realize those paragraphs are in the textbook. Why? Because the church doesn't want anyone to realize that this is like mathematics. There's a structure and there's a system. And if we follow it, no matter who we are, no matter what the weather is outside, no matter where we're located, no matter our age, our gender, no matter our historical background of our family, ourselves, there is not a single thing in our life that could produce two different results if a system that is within a structure and a set of laws and rules are followed, that the result can be any different. And what is that result? Let me reread the quote from page 330. When the 32 planks of the platform is understood, note that that is singular, so the 32 planks are considered a unit, totally unified. When the 32 planks of the platform is understood and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. Healing. Exactly the title to our whole home page right now is Effective Healing. This is how to obtain effective healing. When the platform is understood and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. The magic formula is in English text right before our eyes. It tells us how to make sure that we will have healing. All we have to do is realize that Mary Baker Eddy has given us a system. And the system includes 32 planks, which means topics, to the platform. And what do? With a platform? We stand on it as our foundation. We cannot have one plank missing, or we may fall through the crack, depending on how wide the boards are. Let's assume they're the width of our body or larger than our body, so that we definitely would fall all the way through the crack if we have one board missing. So we have to follow all 32 planks. Just like in the definition of God, there are 7 synonymous terms for God. We cannot overlook love and say, okay, well, we're going to follow mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, and truth. Or we can't ignore truth and say we're going to follow mind, soul, spirit, life, and love. And the same with life. Do you think we can say, okay, we're going to follow mind, spirit, soul, principle, truth, and love? If we're not living the qualities of God, we'll never get there. Mary Beck Reddy says one of the biggest reasons that people fail is they do not use the moment. A moment is defined as the shortest amount of time, the smallest, the most minuscule. It can just be a very quick thought, or it can be something that we linger on and explore. And it's all classified as the moment. Someone may be involved in an activity, and when they come to the success, they might say, this is the moment. For them, in that way, the moment meant the entire operation from beginning to end. This is the moment. We have come to fulfillment of all of the plans that we've implemented with precision and total spirituality, and now we have the result. We should be building our life based on standing on the platform of divine metaphysics and living the qualities. It says the letter and the spirit. The letter is understanding what is in the textbook. The spirit is how we conduct our life. Are we doing it with love? Are we doing it just as an engineer would do it, from a strictly mechanical standpoint, or an architect? Although an architect is more interesting than an engineer, because an architect, especially if they're an engineer as well, if they're an architectural engineer, that means they have the details mastered as an engineer. And as an architect, that means they see the big picture, the design, and how it all fits together to bring something forth that is beautiful, totally beautiful, inescapable from being the perfect example of whatever one is doing. If we're not going to do something striving for perfection, then we shouldn't even begin. How many geniuses do you think there are out of every 100 people you meet? None. How about out of 1,000? Maybe one. Out of 1,000,000, you'd probably have 10. It's probably somewhere in the range of 0.1% and a little higher. What does it take to be a genius? Anyone can do it. Forget about what you think you were labeled as when you were born from a material standpoint. A genius is what you make of your life. Are you going to determine a worthwhile plan, a worthwhile result that you're looking for that would improve the lives of many people and not injure a single one? And it could be duplicated out into the universe of beautiful spiritual thoughts so that it's available to bless all mankind. If you have that frame of thought, then you are going to be successful. You may have to make some modifications in your plan, because as we work through a plan, we might find that there's other ideas here that could be incorporated into it. Or we might find that something that we thought should be in the plan, we discover that, no, that's incorrect. That needs to be removed. And that's going to be the case with everything. Someone might think they build a beautiful building, and let's say it's a residential building. And when the residents move in, they realize something is wrong. Maybe the bathroom is too small. Maybe the closet is too small. Maybe the windows are too small. Maybe someone forgot that there is good ventilation needed and something was overlooked. The plan is 95% of the project. Einstein was asked if he had 1 hour to solve a problem that would mean the difference between saving a lot of lives or destroying them, and he had 1 hour to solve the problem, how would he allocate his time? He said, I would spend 55 minutes determining the right question to ask and 5 minutes to solve the problem. And by that, it is intended to mean 55 minutes to plan, to get all the facts together so they could be analyzed, defined, understood, and then what makes the decision? The facts. The facts make the decision. So our effort must always be research to get all the facts together. What are we doing in this prayer treatment? We're reading quotations, introductions to the entire textbook, definitions of the one and only source, which is God. Now let's look at what God's object is, which is man. Well, we looked at it a little bit because we referred to Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 and 27. What does Mary Baker Eddy say on page 591 of the glossary about man? Man is the compound idea of infinite what? What is the only real substance? Spirit. Man is the compound idea of infinite spirit, the image and likeness of God, the full expression of mind. Three short sentences. If we understand that, it's like what Mary Baker Eddy says about understanding the spiritual sense of the Lord's Prayer. She says, if we understand the spiritual sense of the Lord's Prayer, and she states this on page 16, immediately preceding the Lord's Prayer. So if we understand the spiritual sense of the Lord's Prayer, she says that we will be able to heal instantaneously anything that comes our way. Instantaneously. Just like Frederick L. Rawson. He was looking out a window with another Christian Scientist by the name of Spalding. This is back around 1910 or 1915 or so, maybe 1920. And they see a man that was driving a cart with an animal, and the cart was full of rocks. And the man didn't feel right about something, so he stopped, and he got out, and he went back to look at the tailgate. And when he was back there, there was some kind of a disturbance that got the animal all excited, and the animal raised up and dumped the entire load of rocks on the driver. Totally covered up. Now, it would be very easy to think that that man is DEAD, a goner, But what did Jesus say about Lazarus when everyone considered him dead and had been dead for 3 or 4 days? Jesus said, Lazarus is not dead, but sleepeth. Loose him and let him go. They all had confined him into this little box called death. And Jesus said, release him and let him go. Well, that's what Frederick L. Rosen must have been thinking about this man that was covered up with rocks. Don't even label him as being dead. He felt that the immediacy of what he said would be so important that he just said it. And these are the words that he said. There is nothing but God. What do you think happened? The man came jetting out like a rocket from underneath the rocks. Not a scratch or a problem. The man was perfect. No broken bones, nothing. Mr. Spaulding, which was the one that was viewing the incident, is the one that recorded this, because Frederick L. Rosen was very modest and humble, which of course he had to be in order to be such an expert Christian Scientist. He and two other Christian Science healers had 15-minute appointments. Every 15 minutes, whoever came to him in that period was then released. He'd been healed. And he went on to the next one. If he only worked 8 hours a day, that's 32 healings in a day. And let's say he worked 20 hours a month. That's 640 healings in a month. And in 12 months, we're talking over 7,000 healings. Isaiah 43 tells us, precept upon precept. Precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little, there a little. Mary Baker Eddy has that quotation at the beginning of her very important chapter 14, Recapitulation. So anyone that went through the textbook in the sequence of the chapters studied 13 chapters. All the details. And then they come to chapter 14, which is a summary, a recap, presented in 24 Q&A. And the very first one tells us what God is. And further back, it tells us what man is in great detail. Never does God refer to man in a negative way. God doesn't even know anything that's negative. God only knows himself, because God is all. And Frederick L. Rosen proved that he also had a very clear understanding of what God was, or he couldn't just say the words. The words don't have any power in them. It is the understanding and the living of what the words mean that has the power. The good we do and embody gives us the only power obtainable. Not the words we read, not the words we say. They're only a symbol of the truth that the words represent. It's very important that we practice only truth. We don't want to practice something that is a bifurcation, a dilution, a diversion. We must be sticking with the truth in everything we think, say, and do. Here's a little bit of information on how we got where we are right now. Why is it that when Mary Baker Eddy was here, in visible form, and she began in 1866. That's the year that she was pronounced not to live through the night by three different physicians due to a fall on the ice. And that's the day, or the evening, whatever time of day it was, that she requested her Bible be handed to her. She was bedridden. She couldn't dress herself, couldn't get in and out of bed herself. So she needed to ask for help in doing anything. So she read, she opened the Bible, and wherever it opened, she started reading. And she read some thoughts that had been conveyed by Jesus. And she was so inspired that she got up out of bed, dressed herself, and walked into the room where everyone thought she was going to go. Leave, expire, go around the corner, never to be seen alive again. They were all in amazement. Never do we want to put a limitation on God, or on one of God's reflections. Because there's no limit with the infinite. There's no limit with a substance of spirit, with the intelligence of an infinite mind, identifying something with the spiritual qualities of soul. The spiritual senses of seeing, hearing, feeling, smell, and taste. No limitation to divine principle, which is defined as balance and harmony and structure. And combine the system that mind generates with the structure of principle. And you have a system that is every bit as reliable as mathematics, as a matter of fact, more reliable, because mathematics is only a symbol of the intelligence of God, whereas the system of divine metaphysics is God. It's not a subordinate or tertiary manifestation to primary. And after principle, we have life. There's no limit on what life can produce if we let the mind of God and the spiritual substance and the identity of soul guide us. And we have to make sure we stay on track, which is truth. And we have to make sure we nurture every single thing. And we do that through living it, which is life. So there you have it. All seven terms and their functions. And the four operators are the Word, as mentioned, which is all the facts about God. The Christ, which is translating whatever comes our way and seeing it with its true spiritual nature. And Christianity, which is living the qualities of God, knowing what those qualities are, and knowing that we must translate everything to its true spiritual nature. So it's combining one and two. And that's what brings forth demonstration. What is demonstration? Healing. Healing. And the less we think about the problem, and the more we think about the solution, the faster will be the healing. Frederick L. Rawson didn't devote any time to the problem. He stated the solution. There is nothing but God. In other words, the only thing that exists is God, which includes his manifestation, which includes the individual that had the rocks dumped on top of him in a so-called accident. Let's read again the definition of day, because that's the focus of this prayer treatment. What are we going to do as soon as we open our eyes? That's the purpose of this prayer treatment. This is an example of one way we could approach the eventful day ahead of us. Again, this is from the glossary, page 584. Day, the irradiance of life, light, the spiritual idea of truth and love. Quote, and the evening and the morning were the first day. The objects of time and sense disappear in the illumination of spiritual understanding, and mind measures time according to the good that is unfolded. This unfolding is God's day, and, quote, there shall be no night there. Suppose that we were really tired when we left work the previous day. Say we worked in an office and had a desk full of papers and projects and everything, and we just got up and left. We were exhausted. The next morning we come in, the first temptation is going to be to devote the time to organize everything and do the little related tasks that are something that we would have hoped to have done the previous day, but we didn't do it. So we spend whatever time is necessary on those details. Easily, 1 or 2 hours could slip by before we say, okay, I'm ready to begin working on the primary project. Is that what really happens? Normally, other details come into play. Interferences, people coming in your office and wanting to talk to you about something. Then something else will come up. Very likely the entire day could slip by and not even start working on the primary project that was determined to be the most important project to devote your time to for the whole day or until it's finished. If one studies time management and goal management, they will find that the experts in those fields indicate, don't let anything interfere with resuming your work on a project. Unless there's some emergency that has to be taken care of at the moment. But cleaning up a desk with a lot of details of little things to do, make a note on this, or call this person, or update your to-do list, whatever it is, you have to figure out a way to do that in a methodical, systematic manner at the proper time. And the proper time is not when you should be starting to resume work on an important project. That's the most important thing you can do. On a to-do list, and I use a diagram, a map, a mind map. It's not by the brand name mind map. It's by another one I like far better. But that's what I do. So I can see a view of everything that is important and have notes and so forth. Maybe attached files that I can just click on and it will open, or maybe a website, or a website page. Anyway, it's a very functional thing, and it's something that is suggested for everyone to at least consider. But whatever we're going to do, we should be striving to be a reflection of the perfection of God. And in our personal life as well. Do we like to play tennis? We should be taking tennis lessons regularly as long as we're playing tennis, until we can play tennis better than our instructor. Then we probably have to find a better, higher qualities instructor. A pianist doesn't just play the piano when he's performing in front of an audience. He practices the Hanan exercises every single day and particular compositions every single day. That's the foundation for a pianist, are the Hanan exercises. Whatever we are involved in, we either need to strive for perfection or not do it at all. I'm in an area where there's a place that people can run to exercise. And I look at them and I don't think they realize what the best way is to exercise. Because if one researches it, they will find that the best exercises are done in the confinement of a single room with the use of a chair. If anyone would look at the physical body of Bruce Lee, he was the greatest martial artist of all time. He didn't have these bulging muscles. He could have an opponent that was 500 pounds, in fact, this is a true story, and just had muscles everywhere. He weighed 500 pounds, approximately. I mean, it didn't say exactly, it said 500 pounds. Maybe it's 497 or 503 or whatever. And the fellow had planned to just grab Bruce Lee by the neck. Bruce Lee only weighed like 100 and, I think it was 67 pounds. And he's like 5'6" or 5'7". He looked like a miniature compared to all these big people that challenged him. He determined how to build up the strength in each of his muscles. And it wasn't doing repetitive things like all these muscle men do. He figured a scientific way to do it. And his greatest masterpiece was understanding how the body functioned so that he could detect, before there was any movement of the body, what the first movement would be. And whether it would be coming from the feet or from a fist with an extended arm, or whether it was the head, whatever it was. He had this all determined through his own self-education of how the body functions. So his mastery and how he was the greatest of all time was knowing what would happen before it happened. And then he would move out of the way, so he would not be there. And if it was a fist, it would go into open air. And it would be with such force that often the individual would be on the floor without Bruce Lee ever touching him. Or maybe it might be a very minor thing, like at the end of an extension of a fist, he would just push the fist over by just a little bit with just a tiny amount of force. And you don't have to have much force when it's at the exhaustion of the effort. So he was a master at disappearing before the physical body ever got to where it was intended to go to cause damage to him. He eliminated the conflict. Think about that and how we should deal with evil. Should we understand how evil operates to the 10th degree so that we can detect it before any movement is even started? For example, divide and conquer, a favorite of evil, deceit and deception, decoys, masquerading. Evil wears a mask. Do we know how to identify it? Do we know how to take the mask off? Mary Baker Eddy could not publish her first book in 1875 until she wrote the chapter on animal magnetism. And in a later version, she added the word unmask. Animal magnetism unmask. Chapter 5. It's only 7 pages long. One of the most important chapters in the entire textbook. Every evil act is a result of an action of evil. Jesus never assigned evil to an individual. He separated the evil from the evildoer. Mary Baker Eddy stresses how important that is. Impersonalizing evil. Evil can always find another body to do its work for it. So getting rid of a body doesn't get rid of the evil. You have to destroy the evil based on what the evil needs to function. Our president is a master in the art of war. He knows that in this day and age that evil cannot function without money, because evil involves a lot of people that are trying to carry out the task from beginning to end. So he has worked for the last 10 years on removing the source of money. The very first thing he did in the present term, and he's really been the president since 2017, the one that is advertised as the president from 2021 to 2025 or 2024 was not even alive. The president that we have right now has been the president, and this is third term. But in the beginning of the third term, January of 2025, the first thing he did was to team up with the wealthiest man in the world, the one that brought us the electric car, the Tesla car, and so forth. And they formed an entity called DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency. You might call it the Department of Government Exposure, exposing the evil, exposing the corruption, exposing the swamp. And due to expert programmers that the man that was running the organization, the one that brought the Tesla car to us, and launches rockets and brings them back and lands them in their launching pad, that man. So what he did is he took the expert programmers that he has on his staff and he put them to work in hacking the payment system of the government, because nobody would cooperate by giving him access. So he had the hackers just hack in there. Within 2 hours, they were in the entire U.S. government payment system. They knew where every dollar was going. Or they had access to find out where it was. And they found that most of the money that came to the U.S. government was funneled through a so-called non-government agency called USAID. And it's advertised to be how we give aid around the world to where it's needed the most. But what really happens is it's a money laundering operation, and at the most, 5% of the money gets to where it's advertised to be going. So they nailed the bulk of the money coming in from taxes immediately, within 2 hours. But there are just many resources that are going to the corrupt government. So they've been working on it now for a year and a half. But that's what you have to do. You have to see the big picture. How does this evil operate? Or they need to have a person. Or they need to have this or that. So you cut off their resources of what they need in order to function. And they're the biggest intelligence agency in the world. So they've got a tremendous number of branches out there like a octopus. And there's a total of 144 elements in the system of divine metaphysics that we know of as of now. So it's a matrix that is 12 by 12. 12 columns and 12 rows. Mary Baker Eddy gave us the clue in the very first church that she built in Boston. It had 144 lights in the ceiling. That church was filled with symbolisms. In one of her greatest masterpieces, which was Christ in Christmas, there are a number of illustrations in it. I think there's 12. And 11 of them have something in the diagram. And the final one is empty. It's a blank. And that's the symbol that it's open for further development. So who knows? Maybe there's more than 144. She discovered 144. And it's taken until the year 2010, which is 100 years after she left invisible form, before anyone else realized that there were 144. And that was a friend of the Institute by the name of Rolf Witzke. He was a mainframe engineer for IBM. And that takes someone that is very organized and methodical with a high degree of understanding of engineering and electronics and electricity. What was developed by an early group back around 1950, it came to the culmination. He started working on it about 20 or 30 years later. And by 2010, he came up with his final revisions to his publications that explained it in diagrams and extensive text accompaniments. But she left the final drawing open. And she did not copyright her final edition of Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, which was published in the first part of December of 1910, because she wanted it to be open and for people to feel right in using it to further develop. But obviously, if you're going to be honest, you're going to give credit to anything you get out of that textbook, in anything you write. Because dishonesty prevents progress, it prevents healing, it prevents being on the path of infinite progression. It wipes out the possibility of striving to congruent being. The first thing we want to focus on is the very first part of the definition. The irradiance of life, light, the spiritual idea of truth and love. And the last part, the illumination of spiritual understanding. Realizing that mind measures time according to the good that is unfolded. This unfolding is God's day, and there shall be no night there. Again, that's from page 584 in the glossary. There shall be no night there. Our progress does not include night. Consider this as a plan for your day. Contemplate the highest value project that you can think of that would benefit everyone concerned that are involved in bringing it forth. And then when it is concluded, it's going to benefit the most people that you could think of. And then work backwards. Reverse engineer it. What kind of a plan needs to be involved to bring it from beginning to end? And devote the majority of your day on that project, as well as everyone else that's involved. Forget about all the other little details that can absorb one's time. And of course, one way to do that, if you're the boss, is to delegate everything possible. When I was new, just starting my first business, I visited a friend who seemed to be doing well in his business affairs. And I had visited him at his office, and he had an empty desk. I said, "Well, you don't look like you're very busy." He said, "No, I have nothing to do." How did he manage it? He contracted out to other companies everything he could possibly do. Instead of having a large accounting department, he contracted it out to an accounting company. Today, you can contract out your customer service. And as a matter of fact, now, they're utilizing artificial intelligence. Not even a human are you dealing with, unless it needs to be escalated. One needs to determine the value of every element of what they're doing, and then determine what can be eliminated, what can be delegated, what can be contracted, what can be outsourced to even other countries, where can AI be utilized. The planning and the management are the lion's share of all any plan should have in it. The lion's share. This prayer treatment will close by reciting a very special prayer by Mary Baker Eddy entitled Diapason of Heaven, and she provided seven of them, one for each of the seven synonymous terms. And since the focus here has been on what do we do in planning our day at the very beginning, that heavily depends on mind, as that is the mental capacity, the mental activity, and the mental functionality. So the prayer entitled Diapason of Heaven with a focus on mind will be read at this time. And before I do that, I just want to remind everyone, if I haven't said it already, that Mary Baker Eddy devoted time every hour of the day to make sure she was staying on track and to self-examine that she was never entertaining any thought in her consciousness of anything that was less than perfect about anyone or any event. And that's what enabled her, according to her own words, to do instantaneous healing. Here is the prayer by Mary Baker Eddy, Diapason of Heaven, with a focus on mind. She begins with a quote from Miscellaneous Writings, page 206. The real Christian Scientist is constantly accentuating harmony in word and deed, mentally and orally, perpetually repeating this diapason of heaven. Good is my God, and my God is good. Love is my God, and my God is love. We can declare often, Divine Mind is my mind, and my mind is God. God is my mind, and my mind is good. I have an intelligent mind, a good mind, a wise, perceptive, discerning mind, a clear mind, a joyous, happy mind. Mind is God, all acting, all wise, all loving, all knowing, all seeing. Divine mind is enthroned in my consciousness. Mortal mind and matter and personal sense are not enthroned. Ignorance and apathy and materiality are not enthroned in my consciousness. Good is my mind, and my mind is good. Mind is my God, and my mind is good. Divine mind is enthroned. This is the Word of God. We have to change the subjective thinking we have of these seven names from personal sense to spiritual sense and see ourselves and others as spiritual individualities, not personalities. This way is the only way. It is the way the Bible characters walked with God and ascended. Amen. The title to this prayer treatment has been 1-7, God, Day, indicating to cover each of the seven synonymous terms in our plan for the day. It is Saturday, July 18, 2026, at 0601. Thank you for listening. The end.